You are Locked On Packers, your daily Green Bay Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, 23 seconds to go. Packers again, one timeout remaining. Crosby's career long is 58. Needing two for the first. Rodgers has Nelson in stride. And Jody Nelson takes off to the 10, to the 5, reaches out for the pylon. And it's a touchdown, Green Bay.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. We're going to be okay.
It is time. It is time.
I feel like we can run the table. I'm going to do it.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I am Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for SB Nation. I cover the NFL around the internet, and you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to Locked On Packers on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play. Wherever you find podcasts, you'll find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast in the state of Wisconsin, and the show for fans who know what happened. They want to know why and how. And you can also find the show on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Packers. Jordan Reed is on the show today. We're going to get to that in a little bit. The open of the show is a play you will recognize as Jordy Nelson scoring on Darrell Revis at the end of the first half of a Packers win over the New England Patriots, the game that I often reference as Mike McCarthy's magnum opus, his finest work as a coach. It is the best atmosphere at a regular season game I've ever been a part of at a football game. It is one of the best atmospheres I've ever been to, full stop, for a football game. And it is because Jordy Nelson has decided that he is done playing football. And this brings up a lot of discussions about the Packers. And I think we'll have time another day to go into the legacy of Jordy Nelson and his place in all-time great receivers in Packers history, and where does he stand of receivers of the last, you know, decade. Those are conversations we can have a different time. And I think also, you know, wondering about, would he have retired now? Would he have retired had he been on the Packers now? I think that's an interesting question, and maybe something that we can discuss at some point. I think it puts an interesting lens on this season. And I say that for a particular reason. The way that Aaron Rodgers used Jordy Nelson at his apex, and the way that they used to kill teams off play action and deep shots down the field to Jordy Nelson on deep posts, circle posts, all kinds of different deep routes, shot plays that they designed for Jordy. Those are coming back into this offense. And although Jordy Nelson will not be the guy on the other end, Green Bay is looking for that guy if it's not Devontae Adams. And maybe it is Devontae Adams, but maybe it's Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Maybe it's Equanimee St. Brown. Maybe it's Paris Campbell or N'Keal Harry or, you know, any number of other receivers in this draft. This offense, when this offense was at its best, Jordy Nelson was creating down the field. And I put this out on Twitter. It was interesting. I said, what is the defining Jordy Nelson play? And I think for when we had Randall Cobb, and Randall Cobb is going to Dallas, and, you know, he's not retiring. I'm not going to, you know, we don't have to do a whole, you know, in memoriam for either of these guys. Frankly, they're still alive, luckily, and they're still a part of our football lives in some way or another. I got a couple different answers for Jordy Nelson, and I thought it was appropriate that one of them was the best memory that they had was him picking up the challenge flag when Mike McCarthy threw it, knowing
that was a bad idea. The clip I ended up using was obviously from the Patriots game. I got a lot of votes for the first touchdown in the Super Bowl in 2010, 2011. There were some votes for my vote, the play that I'll always remember is the Giants down the sideline to set up the game-winning field goal in 2011 on the road. That was a play that to me defined what Jordy Nelson was. It defined his contribution to this team, and it embodied why he was so great. Rodgers trusted him implicitly, and they could make plays that seemed impossible possible. Plays that when they connected, they could do things as if by prestidigitation. I mean, it was truly remarkable to watch them at their peaks do things no one else could do. Rodgers to Nelson is the highest rated receiver quarterback combo with a minimum number of attempts in NFL history for a reason. They had a special bond. And the throws on the sidelines, the throws Rodgers whizzing by Viking helmets into the arms of Jordy Nelson, his ability to contort his body on the sideline, the way that at his peak, when you knew he could run by you, you had to give him enough space, and those third and eight comeback routes were just stealing. There was nothing you could do. That's what Jordy Nelson was to this offense. And unfortunately, the ACL and age and just wear and tear robbed him of that at the end of his career. Couldn't get down the field in the same way. Although obviously, you know, 2016 against Chicago, that was another one that got some votes to win the game, basically set up the game-winning field goal. That was vintage Jordy. And I understand that that was a reason why fans were upset when they moved on from him, because you look at 2016 and it was there. The juice was still there. Now, he didn't produce with Brett Hundley, and he looked better with Derek Carr, as you would expect. He, when he was released, said, I want to play another year or two. He played a year. And I had a friend say, you know, do you think he would have retired if it were the Packers? I said, probably not. But the reality for these guys is they can still play the game. They still have a passion for the game. It is all the other effort that you have to put into getting your body ready, all the off-season prep, all the off-season study that you have to do, the practices, the film, the workouts, all of the other things. Brett Favre talked about this. Brett Favre would still be playing if he didn't have to practice, because that's not the part that is hard on your body. That's not the part that makes you wake up early and stay up late and eat avocado ice cream. That part of this whole process is taxing mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, in all the ways that it could possibly be taxing. It is. Do you want to do that on a team that is kind of a mess, that's going to move to Vegas in a year, that's not going to compete for a title, and doesn't have guys that you care about on it? If he were still on the Packers, maybe he would play one more season if he were under contract. But Green Bay made it clear that they didn't want that. They didn't want him on this team. And I know for a lot of fans, that's a bummer. But believe me, Jordy Nelson is not going anywhere. He's still going to be around this team. He is still going to be in our consciousness. He's still going to do interviews. He is still going to be a part of the Packer Nation. I think he always felt like, no matter what, even going and playing a year in Oakland, he was always going to be a part of Packer Nation. And that is the way that Packer fans feel as well. All right, let's get to our guest, Jordan Reed. You can follow him on Twitter at jreed, R-E-I-D, NFL. You can find him at Cover One. He is the host of the Draft Boards podcast. You can find his work at climbthepocket.com. Jordan, thanks for coming on Locked on Packers.
No problem. Pleasure to be here, Peter.
So I know that the NFL draft is a specialty of yours. That's why you're here. Let's start big picture on this. Just give me, you know, some of the guys that you watch. Doesn't have to be top of your board. Doesn't have to be the top five guys. Give me a couple names that are just, you know, that these are the guys that if you were in a draft room, you'd be pounding the table for.
Yeah, so I'm just going to go ahead and start at the top. And I know you said don't mention any top guys, but I'd be remiss if I did not mention
No, it's fine.
And that's Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle from Alabama. He is the top guy on my board. And, yes, I know he's been a bit of a one-year wonder. He had to sit back and wait his turn behind some other notable first-round picks in De'Ron Payne and Jonathan Allen. But he gained some weight this year. He originally was a defensive end prior to this year in Alabama's 3-4 scheme, but he bulked up and gained around 30 pounds, I believe it was. He was right around the 280-pound range last year prior to this season. So he bulked up a bit, and he turned really into a leader of that Alabama defense. And Nick Saban mentioned this as well, and he's just a person that they did not see turning into this type of player, and he really was a relative unknown coming into the year for the most part. So now he's the top guy on my board. He's everything that you want in a defensive tackle. He's a pocket pusher. He can create that interior pressure, especially in a league where a lot of people really have the thinking now where interior pressure is really a bit more important than exterior pressure. So that's why I really value Quinnen Williams a bit more over Nick Bosa. And those are going to be the top two guys. And I can't blame you if you have Bosa at the top or even Williams at the top. I think both of those guys are interchangeable. And another guy I want to mention, this is a guy that we talked about a bit off air, was Darnell Savage from Maryland. He's starting to get some steam here late, and I think the safety class is a bit better than what some people are really giving it credit for, and it's really starting to catch up now with, I mean, with even guys mentioned like a Taylor Rapp or a Juan Thornhill or even a Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. Darnell Savage really stands out amongst that group because he presents value in so many different ways. He's not only a safety, but he can come down and play nickel. He can come down to play in the box as well. So he's checking all these different boxes, and he's just so valuable in a league that's just starved for safeties. And you really have to be able to play not only on the roof of the defense, but you have to be able to fill multiple roles as well.
Yeah, and we're going to get back to that safety discussion a little bit later because that's a position that I think Green Bay is going to target. But as you look at this class as a whole, you mentioned that you thought that the safety class was better than it's been given credit for. Give me a little bit of the way that you view the geometry of this class. Where is it strong? Where is it weak?
Well, of course, you have to start with the defensive line class. I mean, it isn't just defensive end. I think it's strong on the interior as well. And not just Quinnen Williams. You're getting to Ed Oliver and guys of that nature as well, and not just those two. There's plenty of other notable names as well in that list, but on the exterior you have Nick Bosa, Brian Burns, Cleveland Farrell. The list goes on and on. Josh Allen from Kentucky. So defensive line, I think, by far is the strongest position group, but then you get into that second tier positions like tight end. I think this has the potential to be a historic type of tight end class, and maybe it's not as good as when O.J. Howard was coming out and those guys a few years back, but I think as far as from top to bottom, I think there's so much depth, and everyone likes to mention the Iowa guys, but you go on down the line, you get into that second tier, like a Dawson Knox from Ole Miss, a Irv Smith from Alabama, and even a Jay Sternberger from Texas A&M. So you're starting to see these second and third tier guys in this tight end group who maybe could end up being tight end ones at the next level. But at worst, I think you're going to have at least 4 to 5 starters right away in this group. So I would say tight end and safety class. And that's another position that I have mentioned that we have talked about earlier, and some names that I did mention. Taylor Rapp was one that I did mention. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was another, and the list just goes on and on. There's plenty of other names that are notable in this safety class too.
Yeah, and as you've gone through this safety class, I know this was something that I struggled with a little bit. There are some different types of guys that are good at different types of things, and I think this is true of corners, it's true at receiver, where in the NFL, so many things are specialized now where you're asked to play a specific role. And something, you know, Taylor Rapp is not going to play the same role as Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. So, do you agree with me that, one single player could be wildly different in terms of value for a team based on what they're going to ask him to do?
Yeah, and I've mentioned this a lot. The safety class and the wide receiver class are very similar to me because the way I compare it is that it just depends on what type of flavor that you want and whatever floats your boat, as I should say. And with the safety class, you have guys that can play on the roof of the defense, a guy like a Deontay Thompson, who seems to kind of be the forgotten guy in this group because we just haven't seen him healthy recently, he didn't participate in Alabama's pro day, and I think he's going to have his own pro day on April 2nd, so we'll see how he does test there. But he seems to kind of be falling down boards. But then you have other guys that maybe can fit more in that box safety type of role. Taylor Rapp is a great example, and even a Nasir Adderley from Delaware. He's a guy that really is a jack of all trades. But then you have your guys that can just do it all, like a Darnell Savage and other guys that we have mentioned as well. Juan Thornhill is another guy that really just plays all over the place. He even played some linebacker when he was at Virginia. So you're seeing these interchangeable type of safeties, but then you have your one high or single high free safety type. So it just depends on whatever flavor that you really do like. But the good thing about that is some of these guys can fill multiple roles, while some guys are really boxed into certain positions. So it just really depends on what type of safety that your team is looking for, what type of defense suits best for all of these guys.
Yeah, Juan Thornhill had to play corner at times because of injuries at Virginia and was able to do that too. So his versatility is something that I think is really going to appeal to teams. All right, let's lock in here on the Packers in particular. Irrespective of draft slot, if you could just wave your magical draft wand over this draft and say, this is the player in this class, whether it is at 12, at 30, at 44, whatever you want to do, but just any player from this class, doesn't have to be a top player, that just fits, that would maximally impact what they're trying to do, who is that player?
And that's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that, because I love what the Packers have done in the free agency signing Za'Darius and Preston Smith. They kind of relieved their need off of the edge because they just didn't really have an edge presence. And Clay Matthews has gone on now to the Los Angeles Rams. So they really didn't have a certain edge presence. And I'm glad that they did that, because it doesn't really make it a dire need at 12 or even 30 to find that edge rusher. But me personally, a fit that I absolutely do love, and this has kind of been the common theme amongst Packers Twitter here lately, and that's Ed Oliver. I just absolutely love this pick. And it kind of is a best of both worlds. And what I mean by that is, with the Eagles a few years ago, they had this fierce defensive line rotation to where they're just throwing bodies constantly at teams. And that's what I envision with Ed Oliver, Kenny Clark, and Mike Daniels. Just imagine those three guys on the interior, just rotating down in and down out, and just the type of pressure that you're going to generate. And that goes back to my original point, all the way backing up with Quinnen Williams, and just how interior pressure had just become paramount in the league. And it's almost become really more important than exterior pressure from defensive ends on the outside. And then you're talking about a division that has some marginal quarterbacks in Kirk Cousins, Mitch Trubisky, and Matthew Stafford. So the NFC North is more of a passing type of conference outside of the Bears, or division, I should say. Outside of the Bears, you're really getting into a division that really relies on the pass a ton. So getting after those guys, I think, should be paramount for the Packers. And then you insert Ed Oliver into that defensive line rotation with Kenny Clark and Mike Daniels. I just don't understand or know how you would block those three guys consistently on the down in, the down out basis.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins is icing as we speak in preparation for that, because the Minnesota interior in particular in that division is going to have some problems if that is the front that Green Bay is able to trot out there. One of the things that has been discussed on Packers Twitter, on Packers Talk Radio, over the last few months, because a lot of the mock drafts have put a tight end in the first round to them, and including at 12, someone like TJ Hockenson at 12. I have evolved on this. I didn't used to think it was a good idea. Now I'm, as you mentioned, free agency, I think, has changed the trajectory of what they can do in the draft. And I think it's possible, if the draft plays out a certain way, that it could make sense there. What is your feeling about that? And you know, give me your take on these tight ends at the top. Is there someone there worth drafting at 12?
I actually would be comfortable with taking Noah Fant at 12. And Hockenson, I'm a bit more skeptical about, even though I think he's more of a complete player than what Fant is. Sure. Obviously, I think Fant is a bit more better of a blocker than what he's given credit for. But I just think the mismatches that he creates in the passing game, I think that makes him a bit of a better prospect than Hockenson to me. But both of those guys are stacked as far as tight end one and tight end two in my rankings. But I would be more comfortable just taking Fant ahead of Hockenson, just because of what he presents in the passing game. And yes, I know Hockenson is just a tenacious blocker. Everybody has seen the clips throughout social media of what he has done. So just imagine Noah Fant in the passing game with Aaron Rodgers and just pairing him with Devontae Adams. He's essentially going to be your second wide receiver, and you really don't have that. You don't really have a dire need with that second guy. And I think with the receivers that the Packers have, I don't think they necessarily have that dominant number two guy. I think the guys that they do have, some of the guys they took in the later rounds in previous years, they're more of your wide receiver three or wide receiver four, I should say. So bringing in Noah Fant, I think right away he's that important tight end opposite of Jimmy Graham and Matt LaFleur's offense. And we've seen just how important the tight end is in previous years in Matt LaFleur's offense. So you bring in Noah Fant to pair with Jimmy Graham, there's your wide receiver two and your wide receiver three right there. And now your Equanimeous St. Browns and guys of that nature can now flourish off of those guys because they're going to open up the middle of the field to where all these other guys opposite of Devontae Adams can now flourish.
At the very least, that's a hell of a basketball team. I know that you've been doing mocks on your podcast. What is your latest feel and projection for what Green Bay could be doing at 12-30?
Well, I had them taking, if I can remember back, I think I had them taking Noah Fant actually at 12. I had them taking Jonah Williams. Sorry, that was before they signed Billy Turner. I had them taking Jonah Williams and Chauncey Gardner-Johnson at 30. And I think both of those guys would really be good fits. But they really paid Billy Turner like he's going to start at that right guard spot. And I expect him to start at that right guard spot. So I don't think they would really take an offensive lineman that early at 12 now that Billy Turner is entrenched on the interior. Sure. So I don't think a Jonah Williams probably would be a possibility that early. And I still think they'll take maybe a guard later on in the late rounds or even a swing backup tackle of some sorts later on in the draft. But I just don't think an offensive lineman now is a dire need just because of how they paid Billy Turner. But I think safety is definitely in play at 30 or even at 44. And also I think wide receiver could be in play at 30 or 44. Mm. And we've mentioned this before, a guy like N'Keal Harry, I think he would be a perfect complement to Devontae Adams. And you're talking about a guy that can stretch the roof of a defense, but he can also dominate underneath, and which would be a perfect complement to Devontae Adams. So I really like N'Keal Harry's fit, whether that's at 30 or even at 44.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the things that N'Keal Harry did at Arizona State and the questions that you have about him because he had a limited route tree, wins on contested catches, you could have said a lot of the same things about Devontae Adams. He ran a lot of hitches, a lot of slants, and a lot of goes, and he killed teams in jump ball situations. Well, N'Keal Harry has all those same traits, but tested as a much better athlete. So if you're going to project forward, it just sort of follows intuitively. If he can get in the lab with Devontae, work on some of those releases, work on the route running, I mean, it could be scary how much ability he has because of those physical tools. After the catch, we already know what he can do.
Yeah, and that's the biggest thing, or that's his biggest weakness right now, just because his release plans off the line of scrimmage aren't necessarily great. And getting with a guy like Devontae Adams, who I think has some of the best receivers of any, at best releases of any receiver in the entire National Football League, just working with him day in and day out on one of his biggest flaws, I think he already has the post-catch thing down as far as what to do after he has the ball in his hands. He essentially turns into a running back because he has some experience as a return specialist as well. So whenever he gets the ball in his hands, he already has that figured out. It's just the pre-snap process. When cornerbacks come down and challenge him and get in his face, he really gets a bit nervous and his release plans really aren't that great. But luckily for him, those are things that can be instilled in him and coached into him. So you're getting with a guy like a Devontae Adams, who I think he's a perfect complement with, and just working with him on a day-to-day basis would be very, very good for him.
I also love a receiver, really any position, but a receiver especially, that walks on campus and produces from day one at 18, 19 years old, and that's what he did. So that's certainly a name to watch. I think it's a name that Green Bay has interest in. I know Green Bay has interest in him. So something to watch for Packer fans. Jordan, let my listeners know where they can find more of the work that you do.
Yeah, you can find my work at climbingthepocket.com, also at cover1.net. And also you can find my podcast called The Draft Board Podcast, which covers every single team, all 32 teams throughout the league. We're on every single podcast platform, iTunes, Stitcher. And also I want to plug my draft guide, which will be releasing on April 12th for $10. And the pre-purchase or pre-order link will be posted on my page on Twitter at JReedNFL. That's at JReedNFL. On April 1st, which is this upcoming Monday, it will be $10, and all proceeds will be going to the Raleigh Rise for Hunger Foundation located in Raleigh, North Carolina.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that. I'm glad you were able to plug it. And $10, guys, that is not that much at all. And Jordan knows what's up. It all goes to a good cause. So I highly recommend that you check that out. Jordan, thanks for coming on Locked On Packers.
Thank you for having me on, Peter.
All right, I want to thank Jordan again for coming on the show. He puts in the work, and that's why I wanted to have him on. And he is a wealth of knowledge. We've known each other for a couple of years now on Twitter, and it was great to have him on the show. I went on. He does a podcast as well, a different podcast than the one that he promoted. And it's been really cool to see him continue to succeed, continue to get opportunities to show why he is so smart and to impart that knowledge. So I appreciate him coming on the show. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk about what happened at the Florida Pro Day with Ja'Kai Polite. It was not great. We're going to talk about the rule changes. I promised that. I teased that. There are rule changes, replay changes, pass interference related, and it's bad. It's stupid. And so we're going to have to talk about that too. We just haven't had time to do it this week. So we'll get to that next week. And by the time we talk again, the calendar will have turned and we'll be in the month of the draft. So we're really going to be focusing in on these players, Packer opportunities, players that they're going to be interested in. And I'm going to try and get, hopefully, have some of them on the show if we can effort that. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver on that, but we are going to make some efforts, some asks, to try and get some guys on the show as well. So hopefully that's something we can do. I hope you'll enjoy that if we are able to do that. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Play, and on the all-new Himalaya podcast app. Check that out if you haven't already. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that, 920-341-3775, to stay Locked On Packers.